We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
And we're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Need to know what it takes for a home to fit your budget and your family. Rocket can. Welcome to Maggie and Perloff. Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff, hanging out with you for the next 3 hours. 855-212-4227, 855-212-4CBS. That's how you can call us today. And, you know, Andrew Perloff, I know today is a very big football day. We're getting ready for the divisional round in just about 48 hours or so. But there is some serious panic that is happening in Los Angeles with the Lakers, and that is not coming from the outside. That first, panic is coming from within.
Yeah, first of all, panic with the Lakers, that is not surprising at all. We could have said this 3 months ago. We could say anytime they're not winning a title, it's a disaster in LA. Is that fair?
No. Okay, let me revise. It is coming to a fever pitch with the panic. Because, yes, there's probably some, like, mild layer of panic around the Lakers ever since they made the Russell Westbrook trade, because that trade was universally panned. And it's turning out that that trade was not great. Yesterday, Russell Westbrook was benched for the final 3 minutes of their loss, home loss, to the Indiana Pacers, a Pacers team that has not won a game on the road since November. That's a team you got to beat here if you're the Lakers with all of this stuff swirling around. And when I say all of this stuff, well, let me just sort of backtrack and wrap it up for you. So yesterday, a report comes out from The Athletic. Two very buttoned-up reporters, Sam Amick, Bill Oram, have said that Frank Vogel is coaching day-to-day. Right, like,
so every game is a referendum on Frank Vogel's future.
Yes.
A guy who won an NBA title not like 10 years ago.
No, in the bubble.
Won in the bubble 2 years ago.
Yes, so he's day-to-day, all right? So that's not the outside panicking. That's the front office who's panicking, because nobody came out and refuted that report. The players have to speak to the media after games, but nobody from the front office came out and said, that's absolute nonsense, that's not true. So, okay, they wanted to fire Frank Vogel after the Lakers lost to the Denver Nuggets and got blown out. But because they rebounded and they won against Utah, now his job is safe. But now they lost to the Pacers. And, like, this is what we're going to be doing back and forth here. So all of those questions about Frank Vogel's job security, he's being asked about over and over again. Then the Russell Westbrook situation. Whether or not Frank Vogel had to get permission from the front office to bench Russell Westbrook in the final minutes. And he said, yeah, like, I did have permission, which wasn't a given. Like, that had to be stated to the media and to extension to the public. Why is Russell Westbrook still playing in these games where he clearly doesn't have it? He's not helping his team at the end of the game, in fact, hurting his team. And finally, Vogel actually benched him last night.
I'm so confused on several levels.
Okay.
First of all, you told me the front office doesn't run the Lakers. LeBron runs the Lakers.
I said it was a partnership.
It's a partnership. No, you didn't say that, but everybody says that. So who is this person that's telling the coach, Frank Vogel, he has to play Russell Westbrook? And if you're a coach worth your salt, don't you have to defy management there? So he took him out last night against the Pacers. They still didn't win.
Right.
And then afterwards, he admitted that this is the way it is. Like, I have to get clearance to set my rotation?
Well, the way that he'll put it is, we talk all the time, we're in constant communication, but yes, I have a full go if I want to bench Russell Westbrook, because that was indeed a question because of Westbrook's playing time, and even when he's had lapses on the defensive end and still gets to play, let alone the shooting slump that he was in only a week ago and other things.
You mean the shooting slump that he's been in since he got out of UCLA?
You're the worst. You're so
no,
bad.
No, no, no.
He's not he wasn't a good player ever. You just think that the MVP he had that year was bogus. But, like, you acknowledge that Russell Westbrook at one point was a good player, yes?
Have you ever heard me acknowledge that?
No.
Because you're not going to win basketball games at a high level with Russell Westbrook, because he has the ball in his hand all the time and the dude can't shoot. Are you going to make me pull out true field goal percentage this early in the show, Maggie?
Wow.
You don't want to. I have.
You want to get nerdy?
I have metrics here that there are 61 shooters who qualify as 59th in effective field goal percentage. What effective field goal percentage is? I'm glad you asked because I don't really know. But I know that Russell Westbrook's not good at it. So you're with me, though. You said Russell Westbrook style-wise was not a fit.
No, it definitely,
the dude can't shoot.
It definitely wasn't a fit, but there is, like, not a reason here for, to me, this level of panic, again, that is coming from inside the front office. None of the media, none of the fans are the ones who are saying Frank Vogel's day-to-day. What the hell do we have to do about that? We can't do anything about that, right? Frank Vogel's not the problem, and I don't think anyone ever outside the Lakers ever thought he was the problem. So the idea that his job is now, and he's like on, you know, quicksand here, that's not coming from anyone except for inside the organization, whether that's the front office side, LeBron side, whatever you want to say. But LeBron was pretty forceful in backing up Frank Vogel yesterday. Let's hear from LeBron James. He was asked about Frank Vogel's future.
I'm not in that business of pointing fingers or pointing blame or trying to put a quote at the end or at the start of somebody's of someone's commentator of what they feel, you know, our coaching staff or Frank is or where Russ is or where I'm at or AD. If it's not positive for me, I'm cool. It's not my lane. I'm not a negative person.
LeBron.
So if you got something, you know, if you got something to ask me besides trying to somebody, I actually.
Right, like this is not asking though for people to go out of their way to be negative about Frank Vogel. The team is under 500. And there have been reports coming out that his job isn't safe. Like, stop me. I'm sorry. Where did that become a media convention? It was a media report from two very credible journalists. But that's not the media just spinning something out of thin air.
Not only that, it's not like LeBron was endorsing Frank Vogel there. Like, if I'm on a team and I really like my coach, I'm saying, we love Frank Vogel. You heard the Las Vegas Raiders talk about interim coach Rich Bisacci. It's a love affair. LeBron could have taken that route and said, Frank Vogel's my guy.
Well, at one point in the press conference, he did say, it's on the players. It's not on the coach. It's on the players. We're the ones who have to go out and win the game.
But do you sense that there's a real connection here with LeBron and Frank Vogel?
Not really. No, but I'm not really sure like who LeBron really has deep connections to, like Ty Lue. Well, he's coaching the Clippers. I mean, David Fizdale is on this staff. They obviously go back to their Miami days. But to me, like, I'm curious if you think that this is it for the Lakers. Like, have you given up on the Lakers? Because all that's swirling around here, listen, they could fire Frank Vogel tomorrow. And like, do you think that's going to fix this Russell Westbrook issue? No. Is the next coach going to be able to bench Russell Westbrook? Is that going to be a question? Like, why does anyone think that the coach is the one where it is really to blame here for the Lakers' woes? And then this leads me to my ultimate question, which is why is the front office panicking again here? And again, they are the ones who are panicking. When Anthony Davis has been out for the last month.
Right. Why are we scrutinizing a team that has missing its second best player, not just any second best player, one of the best players in the NBA?
It doesn't make sense to me that they wouldn't want to wait. Well, and again, I don't know if they are going to wait on Frank Vogel, but if he's coaching day to day, then obviously the Lakers are going to, you know, they're not going to win every game from here on out. And hell, they just lost last night. So if you're really going to evaluate Frank Vogel day to day when Anthony Davis is scheduled to come back any day now.
Well, the bottom line, though, Maggie, do you think the Lakers with Anthony Davis are a real title contender?
I think they've got a much better shot. They're on life support right now.
Okay.
In terms of title contender hopes, I don't know if I've 100% given up on that, but it's on life support. The one thing that can change it would be Anthony Davis, and he's coming back.
My counter to that would be that no team with Russell Westbrook is ever going to win an NBA title.
Wow, you got a Westbrook thing.
So, and that means the front office screwed up. And what's the front office going to do when they screwed up? And you look at this roster that has guys who are, everybody who's 38 and over and still in the NBA is on the Lakers. They have the slowest offense by analytics. They have the slowest offense in the league. Of course they do. They're all like 40 years old. It's like basically me out there playing basketball. So I think the front office realizes they screwed up in the design of this team. They let so many good players defensively go from the championship team. So what do you do if you're the front office and you have these mistakes?
You
blame the coach. So he's complete scapegoat.
Yeah, he is going to get probably scapegoated here. And he probably saw the writing on the wall when after they won the title, they only gave him a one-year contract extension after this contract. So he's through next year. but that's it. But I'm just curious, like, all of this is swirling around the Lakers. There's some drama to kind of be expected all the time with a LeBron James team just because our interest is there. You could say the same thing about the Warriors or about the Brooklyn Nets. Mm. You know, we have this sort of some teams, the 76ers. There's some teams that just really are more drama-filled than others. But this one to me is different because, again, this to me feels like it's coming from the top. When you don't have a full roster, yet it's the front office are the ones that appear to be panicking. They're the ones who appear to be in CYA right. mode, right? Like you said, Frank Vogel is probably going to be the scapegoat here, and I'm going to agree with you. Why do they need scapegoating right now?
Well,
they're under 500, but they're not playing with their full team.
Yeah, but it's the Lakers. You know, you did mention there are other teams that get attention, but how many shows and movies are there about the Lakers in production right now?
Yes, I know. Several about the Lakers. I'm looking forward to them.
There's a 30 for 30 going on about the front office drama that we don't even know about. LeBron's camp, Rob Pelinka, the bus camp, the Rambus camp.
Is John C. Reilly also going to be in that dramatic redo?
So it's like Tom Brady. There's 7 documentaries out about Tom Brady. There's going to be 10 documentaries on the Lakers. There's something going on in the front office too. The other thing that you didn't really get into, who is really controlling that team?
Great question. Are we going to have to wait for the 30 for 30? I don't know if I got that kind of time.
I don't think it's just a matter of Frank Vogel being the scapegoat. I think everyone's trying to come up with a plan and they keep making all these changes that make things worse.
Who do you think's really in charge? I mean, obviously you know, the Buss family, but like, or Jeannie Buss, because remember she won that power struggle.
I still think Rob Pelinka has more play than I think you might think. I think you said Rob Pelinka is kind of like a placeholder while LeBron runs a team to some extent. No, we're not going to be one of those shows that be like, LeBron's a coach, LeBron's a GM, everything goes on LeBron, I hate LeBron.
No. See, but I don't actually use that as fodder to hate on LeBron. I use that as fodder in a lot of ways to praise LeBron because, like, this may not be praiseworthy. Like, you know, if he indeed had any say, sign off on the Russell Westbrook trade, that's obviously a huge mistake. But you cannot tell me that orchestrating Anthony Davis out of New Orleans was a mistake. No way. They won a title because Anthony Davis pulled that move. That's clutch. That's the agency. They pulled that move. That's a power move that I would give LeBron James full credit for. Mm. Salute. Because he found later on in his career the guy is still like, playing how many minutes per game? Like still over 32 minutes a game, I believe. He's got all these 30-point games. Like, he's still carrying this huge load for the team. But credit to him realizing in my mid to late 30s, I'm going to need to pair up with somebody. And he did the ultimate, like, you know, baller move in getting Anthony Davis. So I don't use that to hate on him.
But I think if you say that he brought in Anthony Davis, then you have to say he brought in Russell Westbrook. It just seems like, you know, we all saw the reports. They could have probably gotten Buddy Hield out of Sacramento, who would have fit style-wise, an outside shooter to complement LeBron. It sure feels like LeBron brought in Westbrook. Because the quotes afterwards are like, oh, I love this guy. He's going to help me by carrying some of the load in the regular season. It really hasn't happened that way. Because Westbrook's been more inconsistent than usual. Yeah, I think you can't sort of have your cake and eat it too. Either you're going to put it on LeBron or you're not. I don't think it's just LeBron. Honestly, I think there's a lot of power struggle in the front office right now. And I think they're getting their hands in there. Just based on that Russell Westbrook report that Frank Vogel had to talk to somebody to pull him at the end of the game. I feel like the management had a really good team in the bubble. And they panicked. I'm not quite sure why. They brought in a whole new team. You know, there's only 3 players left from that championship team already. It's only 2 years later. So there's definitely too much change, too much turmoil.
855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. That is the number to call. The question today, have you given up on the Lakers? Have you given up on the Lakers for this season being a title contender? Because the one thing will happen is you can say, oh, Maggie, trade deadline's coming up. Westbrook ain't going anywhere. Find me the sucker who's going to take that off your hands. No way is Russell Westbrook moving. So he's going to be there. They don't have a ton of assets to trade. What is the future and fate of the Lakers? 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. Hey, you can also get in touch with the show on social media at Maggie and Pearl, P-E-R-L, on Twitter. You can also hit up my co-host at Andrew Perloff or me at Maggie Gray.
I just tweeted a play that proves that Dak Prescott could have gotten to the line and spike the ball in time in a normal circumstance at Andrew Perloff and at Maggie Gray, you can see this play. So if you go to our Twitters, I have definitive video proof that the Cowboys should have been able to get another play.
Definitive video proof. It sounds like Exhibit A.
Yes, it's like there's a Zapruder film. No, okay. But I feel pretty good about this tweet. So if you want to check me out on Twitter, I think we could get in this Dak thing, and I feel like they could have gotten the playoff.
Wow. The Lakers, the Cowboys, what could be next? We're taking your calls. We see you guys. You're lined up on the phones already. 855-212-4CBS. It's Maggie and Perloff on CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, and SiriusXM Channel 158.
Back here on Maggie and Perloff, we're talking Los Angeles Lakers. So we're asking, do you think the Lakers are done for the season? We want to get people on the record. I want to get you, Maggie. I say they're done because no team with Russell Westbrook is going to win an NBA title.
Right. So you're taking all this drama that's swirling around the Lakers, you're ignoring all of that and just simplifying it and saying, if Russell Westbrook's on your team, you're not winning a title anyway.
Yeah, I'm fast-forwarding to the divisional round of the NBA playoffs and seeing a guy leaving Russell Westbrook all alone for an 18-foot jumper and said jumper hitting the side of the rim and going off.
The divisional round.
What's that called? What's the second round?
I think you're stuck in NFL
Wait,
mode.
What if I said the Western Conference semifinals?
Yes, that exactly. That's
that
what
doesn't
it's
sound right. The second round.
Nobody calls it the divisional round in the NBA. You're getting your sports crossed up.
You're right. So now you have to go on the record. Don't try and avoid this here with your your semantics. Go ahead. Give me Lakers. Are they done for the year or are they still alive?
So the question is actually, have you given up on the Lakers? But we can call it that way too. Are the Lakers done for? And I'm going to say no. No, they're not. They're on life support. Oh, they're on life support. But Anthony Davis is scheduled to come back, we believe, sometime in this road trip they're about to embark on. I believe a 6-game road trip that starts in Orlando. Anthony Davis this season was averaging 23-10. He was playing 35 minutes a game. I can't just all of a sudden say a team is cooked when they're missing one of their, if not their best player. No offense to LeBron, who's doing a lot out there, I realize. But, you know, Anthony Davis was the key for them winning that finals in the bubble, too.
I understand exactly what you're saying, but I think the Westbrook factor is too much for me. Also, the Carmelo factor, which is sort of the Westbrook.
Carmelo factor.
I don't really see Carmelo walking away with an NBA title.
He won a college title.
Oh.
People say that Carmelo's not a winner and always forget that one.
Okay, so that's when Nick Sirianni said a bunch of his players on the Philadelphia Eagles played in the national title game in college, you laughed out loud at that statement.
I did, because there's nothing about that that's going to the national title game in college that's going to translate when you're facing Tom freaking Brady. When you say Carmelo Anthony straight up is not a winner, that's just not true. He did win in college.
There are so many people in New York. One of the worst parts about living in New York is hearing people say Carmelo won at Syracuse, therefore he's a winning player, because that makes no sense to me. There's no translation, just like there is in football.
Well, Carmelo's not the problem here with this team. You could say that the overall age of the Lakers might be a problem. I'll give you that. But I don't think Melo's really, on the list of things that are wrong with the Lakers, Melo's pretty far down.
And he's not the solution either, just
no,
to be clear.
No, that's true. I'm with you on that one. So the question is, have you given up on the Lakers? 855-212-4CBS, because it feels like the front office is panicking here, and they're panicking with their head coach, and he's coaching day-to-day, even though they don't have their best player and haven't had him in a month. Let's go to Glenn. He's in North Dakota. He's up first here on Maggie and Perloff on CBS Sports Radio. What's up, Glenn?
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, love the new show, both of you. Really love it.
Oh, thanks, man. What's on your mind?
First thing I want to say is the Lakers are cooked, and they were always going to be cooked because of one simple thing, The development of Anthony Davis, even before he got injured. Look at his numbers from mid-range. Look at his numbers from three. He was remarkably inefficient. remarkably. And he's not a killer.
Yeah.
By this time in his career, that man should have, if you look at guys like Giannis, look at guys like Joker, how they've developed over the years, how they target skills they're not good at. Why doesn't Anthony Davis have a jump shot, considering he's lobbied his entire career to never play center?
Right. He does love being a power forward.
Small ball center now.
Yeah.
You know, the best thing for Anthony Davis is that Russell Westbrook's jump shot's even worse. Anthony Davis, the metrics on Anthony Davis' outside shot, and if you combine the two, there is no worse duo in the NBA who takes more shots and misses more jump shots. Glenn, you are exactly right.
Yeah, but Glenn, I get what you're saying, but where I can't follow you is about the three-point shot. Like, I know that other centers or big power forwards have developed that part of their game, so maybe it's inexplicable, but it's not like he's out there attempting a really big volume of it too and just bricking them left and right and like forcing something that's not there. You're right, he's got to make a decision and add more weapons in his post game and become more dangerous there, no doubt, but at least it's not like my partner's favorite basketball player Russell Westbrook, who is not a great shooter but will still continue to shoot with reckless abandon and hurt his team that way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I mean, Westbrook went 5-for-17 last night. Of course they sat him, and he was a minus 18. Of course they sat him to the end of the game. But the point with, he's been playing with true centers. Davis has been playing with true centers his entire career alongside of him. Mm. Okay. In the modern NBA, you can't have more than one non-floor spacer
That's
on the
true.
Floor at a time.
You're absolutely
and
right.
You put Westbrook and you put Davis, who all of a sudden is not developing, on the floor at the same time. You're literally playing 3-on-5 when you drive to the basket.
Yep.
It takes away the best thing that Westbrook does. It takes away the best thing that LeBron does. And it means that doubling Davis and getting the basketball out of his hands is so, so easy.
Mm. Man, so you think they're
cooked. Why, they're 24th in offensive rating.
And you think they're cooked even when Davis comes back because of that. Glenn, thanks for the call.
I feel like
that was a dynamite call. I feel like Glenn's like a basketball coach or something.
I feel like Glenn and I could ruin a dinner party getting into analytics of basketball. I think we could bore people to death talking about floor spacing.
I think it could be anything, a brunch, a lunch, you know, and baptism, a graduation.
Defensive efficiency numbers, true field goal percentage. I mean, basically, you like if you're single, like you're ending any chance of dating by bringing up any of these stats.
Did you see the Curb Your Enthusiasm episode about the middle? The person who's the middle of the dinner party and how important they are because they have to keep the conversation going? You and Glenn, I really like what you bring to the table. You're not middles. Let's go to Nick. He's in Texas. Hi, Nick. How are you?
Hey, what's going on, Megan and Pearl? It's your buddy Nick from Texas, a.k.a. Scuba. Shout out to all the Against the Grainers from the Pearl Law.
Nick, what's happening, man? So good to hear from you. What's on your mind?
Well, I have two things today, but as a diehard Laker fan, I did not want to touch the subject until mid-March. But I do still feel they have time with half the season left to right the course of the ship, and depending on the street clothes, Davis's health going forward. But my take is, I don't think we'd be in this situation if Pelinka would have kept KCP and Alex A.C. Fresh Caruso and traded Kuzma and Harrell for Buddy Hield instead of Westbrook. I like the hometown dude, but I just don't think he's a good fit.
Oh, Nick, I'm so with you. And I was with you earlier. It was a late. When was that trade? They definitely should go. Buddy Hield was a no-brainer there. You know, I have a list of who's gone from the title team. Kuzma, Caldwell Pope, Alex Caruso, Danny Green, Montrezl Harrell, Markieff Morris, and Wesley Matthews. And they brought in just basically the 2011 All-Star team. You know, Westbrook and Carmelo and all those guys. It's so obvious. We haven't even talked about how bad they are on defense. That hasn't even come up yet. They just don't play defense.
Do you realize you just ruins Nick's day? Did you hear that?
Yeah.
That was, you said, we haven't even talked about defense, and like a part of Nick died.
No. Nick likes talking about how bad they are. I can tell. He's into it.
I don't know.
No. Well, you know, and okay, a little off subject, but speaking of the Lakers, you had me thinking about Shaq's investments on Monday.
I'll set it up for the audience. So there was a headline, it was an article about how Shaq has divested himself from the Sacramento Kings. He's no longer a minority owner. And I thought, I didn't even know Shaq was a minority owner. And I wonder if Shaq even knew he was a minority owner, because he's probably a minority owner of so many different businesses and things. He might have lost track.
Well, here's what I found. He owns 50 different brands and stakes in over 364 companies. He owns a movie theater and several Las Vegas nightclubs. Now, that's expanding your portfolio.
Wow. Las Vegas nightclubs. Yeah. He's not out there really promoting those that much.
I think, by the way, we might have an angel investor for the product that you pitched yesterday, Maggie.
Yeah, that one made it into the tail end of the show. And Nick, thanks so much for the call. And keep the tweets coming in the Facebook posts. We love them. We're going to get into the graphic that you sent us about NFL standings for the decade. That was really, really cool. So we'll get into that a little bit later. Nick in Texas really coming through with the content.
Shaq's a perfect spokesman for your new product.
Okay, so the idea is the portable plunger. Mm-hmm. We talked about this yesterday. Want to take it to Shark Tank. I thought that, now just take it to Shaq. I really thought that this idea was dead in the water. Mm-hmm. I couldn't get past several obstacles. The disposing of the plunger, I knew it was going to have to be like a one and done kind of thing. But like, you know, you're talking kind of about like a biohazard and like, how are you going to dispose of this? And are you going to sell it in a 3-pack? And what's the, well, I was getting ahead of myself.
How you shrink it to get it into the package?
I think that was a challenge. No, it's going to be a telescopic handle.
Right.
And then you were going to screw in the plunger part. There were so many obstacles and I talked to a patent attorney. It was a nightmare. We couldn't get through it. But one thing you said yesterday that made me think this could be back on the table is when you mentioned like the new space age material. And I'm like, I came up with this idea when I was in high school and I really haven't followed up since, you know, and it's been 20 years since I was in high school. The world's changed a lot. You know, there's like been a lot of advancements.
So space age polymers, yeah. Maybe, you know, Elon Musk could certainly get involved in here. I don't know if you need any electronics for said portable plunger. But, you know,
they warn you when like the flow of the toilet is low and you might actually like the water isn't as robust. Or like a faulty handle.
I think a guy like Shaq, who's a rather large man, would be more interested in this. I think he's been caught in
a tough situation.
I'm going to have to guess that Shaq has had some issues in bathrooms before. You know, I
wasn't even going to take it there.
Little celebrity name drop. I've been in the bathroom with Shaquille O'Neal.
Bravo. You proud of yourself for that one?
It was the Uncle Drew premiere, Kyrie Irving's movie where he played Uncle Drew.
We got
invited to it somehow, and after we went to the after party.
You got invited to it somehow because you used to work with Dan Patrick.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Kevin, not like, oh my God, this invitation came in the middle.
There's a guy, I'm in my movie chair, there's a guy whose knees are coming to me from behind. I look around annoyed. It's Kevin Durant, who barely fit into him. Anyway, we went to the after party, and Shaq is in the bathroom.
Did you try to make conversation with
him? No, I got in there and out of there.
Was he like, does anyone have a plunger? See?
Yeah, and then
have to go back in time.
That would have been the time to pitch the portable plunger. Perfect. No, we were actually at the urinals, to be specific, where it wasn't an issue, but then my co-worker and Reggie Miller come out of said bathroom and they're giggly. They're like, Shaq was in the bathroom. That's always interesting. Right, we might need a break, by the way.
Yeah, we all have a lot of questions for you.
Shaq likes different brands. I don't think it's dead at all. I think, in fact, that we are going to make a lot of money.
Well, according to Nick, Shaq has owned, over 350 brands and, what do you say, 30 states, multiple nightclubs?
Yeah, who needs crypto? Who needs NFTs when you have a product that can be taken from bathroom to bathroom like the portable plunger?
It's getting back to the roots, like what this country was built on. You know, movable product. That's what I'm talking about. 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. Yeah, I did that. Perloff tweeted out a video of Aaron Rodgers basically executing what the Cowboys were trying to do at the end of the wild card game. And somehow he thinks this exonerates the entire Cowboys offense and their whole organization. Like, look, they actually did call the right play. We'll get into that next. Don't move. More Maggie and Perloff.
This weekend on CBS, the NFL Divisional Round, presented by Intuit TurboTax Live, begins Saturday at 4:30 Eastern, 1:30 Pacific, when Joe Burrow and the Bengals head to Tennessee for a battle with the top-seeded Titans. Then Sunday at 6:30 Eastern, 3:30 Pacific, it's a highly anticipated rematch when Josh Allen and the unstoppable Bills offense take on the equally unstoppable Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. Get set for both games with the NFL today. The NFL Divisional Round, presented by Intuit TurboTax Live, this weekend, only on CBS. Now, we're going to get to a lot of the upcoming games, which I'm so excited for. I cannot wait for this weekend. But there seems to be one game that people cannot let go of and one play, Maggie, that people cannot let go of, and that's the end of the Cowboys game. You know, I don't know if you heard Ezekiel Elliott mic'd up, but he basically said, what just happened there? The ref got in the way. You know, but it's been broken down so many ways.
Right.
I feel like I proved it could be done. There were 14 seconds left when Dak Prescott and the Cowboys, down six, ran a scramble play where Dak was supposed to run about 10 yards, get down, then they were going to spike the ball and get one shot at the end zone.
Right, right.
As we all know, it didn't happen. But that doesn't mean it was the wrong call. 14 seconds, I feel, is plenty of time. Some experts said you need 16, but if they had executed it the right way, they would have been fine.
Right, so you dug into the archives of,
yes,
I don't know what, NFL Films. I don't know how you still have a password. You haven't worked there in a long time, but somehow you got your hands on the Green Bay Packers so smoothly executing. It wasn't a scramble play by Aaron Rodgers. It was a drop back throw, but how they were able to, in effect, get, what did they gain, about 17 yards on that play?
Right, they were sort of in the same part of the field, but they only needed a field goal.
They needed a field goal, but just the point was they were able to execute this and still leave 1 second left on the clock to execute another play.
I think they
that was the point.
Now, the timing's a little different. They started at 16 seconds.
Whereas the Cowboys had
14 seconds.
Right.
Now, then they spiked the ball with 3 seconds left. But the thing is, Aaron Rodgers, by the end, was chilling. He was just walking up to the line. He's like, oh, I got plenty of time. He basically, everybody was working in unison. He could have spiked the ball with 5 seconds left. It could have taken 11 seconds. And he was just about the same distance downfield as Dak Prescott was. Dak didn't even have to drop back and pass. He just took off, and it worked. So I feel like everyone's killing Mike McCarthy for the play call, when it was really more about the execution. And Mike McCarthy, in a kind of a long, rambling press conference, did address it. Let's hear what he had to say.
As far as Dak sliding, giving the ball to the center can spot the ball. The receiver can spot the ball. So the fact that the opinion of you can't spot the ball is not correct. We had great confidence in that situation. So it's the right call based on our preparation. We just got to really look at the mechanics and the timing of that, too. So it's a 13-second threshold is the call. So at 14 seconds, it's, in my view, the right call.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was, a 13-second, because that's what Aaron Rodgers did against the Niners. This is week three. I was rewatching that game because, obviously, the Packers and Niners are going at it again. It was an incredible game. Jimmy G led them down for a touchdown. Then Aaron Rodgers was just, and Devontae Adams are unbelievable. I hope the games are like that this weekend. But it does seem like it's really not that hard of a play. I do not understand how this thing became such a jumbled mess.
Okay, well, first of all, the Cowboys were out of sorts all day.
You know, that's very true.
That was the beginning of this, was that the Cowboys actually never really looked all that comfortable, especially on the offensive side. I mean, Dak did make a couple good throws, but it was a labor. I mean, they only really started moving the ball when they started going to Dalton Schultz. They could only really move the ball when two San Francisco defenders, you know, went out of the game with injuries, two of their best. And so they were never on the same page. You know, when I hear Mike McCarthy say that, it's like, all right, this is a 14-second play. You should be able to get down there, get the ball spotted. He never mentions, though, also that the ref has to touch the ball. See, in that clip that you have at Andrew Perloff, you can go watch it, what Aaron Rodgers does and Devontae Adams and how they execute this seamlessly is Adams goes and puts the ball on the line, and the referee is right there to touch the ball. That was never even a thought. Meanwhile, in the Cowboy game, you got the referee coming from out of the screen, running like, you know, he's trying to win the gold medal at the summer games, and he bumps right into Dak in the offensive line, and it created this, like, you know, more time off the clock, more kind of hysteria. The Dallas Cowboys don't have a lot in common with the Green Bay Packers to me.
What do you mean?
You know, like, when I think about well-oiled machines of who could be pulling this kind of thing off, I know Dak Prescott gets paid as much as Aaron Rodgers, but I don't put him in the same class as Aaron Rodgers. You have the Dallas Cowboys, who are the most penalized team in the NFL. The Green Bay Packers are the least penalized team in the NFL. You want to talk about who's buttoned up in terms of, like Mike McCarthy said, the mechanics and trying to pull something like that off. I would trust the Packers 10 times out of 10. And the Cowboys, and the way they were playing over the weekend on Sunday, I wouldn't have trust them to execute this high-level maneuver.
Yeah, but Mike McCarthy was in Green Bay for a decade. The dude won a Super Bowl there. Matt LaFleur has not won a Super Bowl yet. I feel like everyone's throwing Mike McCarthy under the bus. You can't say that everybody else is more organized. I mean, Matt LaFleur is, I know he was Coach of the Year.
I had plenty of problems with what they did at the end of the NFC Championship game.
Right. Lot of teams make mistakes, but they're magnified because it's the Dallas Cowboys, and everybody wants to talk about the Dallas Cowboys.
No, I think it's because they lost in a playoff game that, 41 million people watched? I mean, it was a huge deal. But to me, it was like, even for the Packers even the official being in the right position helped them execute that play. Yeah. You know, it'd be hard to look at the if the Cowboys want to look themselves in the mirror and say, like, did we actually do everything right here? Did we actually have all of our T's crossed? I don't think so, or else they would have been able to execute it. Well, and maybe Dak just should have slid a lot earlier.
No, no doubt about that. But the other thing, too, is like we're making the whole game about this one play, and you pointed out the Cowboys were out of sorts all day. Mm-hmm. What are the odds, even if they were at the 20-something yard line, that they were going to hit that pass? Say they had spiked the ball with 1 second left, and Dak goes back and he throws it over CeeDee Lamb's head. Nobody's talking about that play. I feel like there's just everyone loves jumping on the Dallas Cowboys. Well, it's good content.
Well, but it was a very exciting end of the game. So I thought it was interesting when we were listening to our good friend Zach Gelb, who comes on after us here on CBS Sports Radio, and he was talking to Eric Davis, the former 49er, who said something that I hadn't heard yet, which was Dak should have audibled out of that play. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Like, Dak should have audibled out of that, knowing that they wouldn't have been able to pull that off with the quarterback sneak and get the ball up and spiked. And, you know, listen, I know that Eric Davis played in the NFL. I didn't. But again, the Cowboys were totally, like, discombobulated for most. Like, I remember I tweeted out at one point, like, the Cowboys are just a train wreck. That's what it felt like for them on offense.
During the game, you tweeted
during
that.
During the game. Mm. And, like, I don't think anyone watching that felt like the Cowboys were really playing at a super high level. In fact, they were actually kind of disappointing. The offense was super disappointing that game. And so, you know, the idea that Dak in that kind of confusion would audible, is that an expectation for Dak Prescott?
No, because also the quarterback can't be studying the clock. It's hard enough to do it from the booth. I would think that Dak was going to do the math in his head. Wait, if I run for 4 seconds and it takes 10 seconds, that would be impossible. I think for a quarterback to even figure that out or to have the guts to audible there.
No, I thought at that point, you usually have two plays called in the huddle.
Yeah.
So you are, or I think just two would be like, all right, if we do this and we complete this, then we get up and we do the scramble and we execute, you know, our end of game scenario one, 1A, whatever.
You know,
spider 2Y banana, whatever it is.
No, I know Eric Davis obviously has been in a million on the field, but I feel like we overestimate what a quarterback actually does in a huddle. I always wonder that. But you see in movies, they're like, all right, guys, we're going to get him. Jimmy, you're going to prove what your dad said wasn't true. They give these emotional speeches.
Truth
is they have their hands on their helmet trying to get the call in, and then they just shouting a code, basically. I don't think even
you don't think any inspirational stories and speeches are happening in the huddle?
And even
how unromantic of you.
I heard someone say Peyton Manning, all the credit he got for audibles, was only going through one, two, or three choices on these audibles. It's not like the quarterback gets to the line and is getting a play out of nowhere. He has set looks he's looking for, then he's gonna switch off of it. That I don't think there's anything in their playbook where, like, all right, if there's 14 seconds left and we call a quarterback run, you're going to audible out if the look is this. I mean, that sounds like something that would never come up in a quarterback's mind. You think he should have audibled?
No, I can't put that on him. I've already put so much on Prescott.
Yeah.
I mean, I've just really criticized, just me and everyone else have really criticized him for how he played in that game. To also put on that he should have audibled out of that. And I get, you know, yeah, he's making $40 million. Like, I get it. But, you know, he's also is in that situation. I don't know if that's unfair to say he should have audibled out of that play. I don't think so. 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. I mean, I know we're going to rehash this play even more and more. But, like, where have you landed on the blame game? Because, like, it's Thursday now. We got new games in the divisional round are coming up really soon here, like Saturday afternoon. We're almost there, people. Like, we're almost there.
Yeah, but it's
Cowboys. It's Thursday.
No. But you're going to have Stephen A. Smith yelling about the Cowboys up until the Super Bowl.
we'll yell about the Cowboys till the end of time. But the thing is like, at now, you got to have your blame game set. You know, we can't just let this thing go on and on and on. You got to pick your person here. Who are you blaming? Because it's not McCarthy now. You think that the play call or Kellen Moore, maybe this is why he still keeps getting all these interviews. Maybe the rest of the NFL is seeing what you're seeing.
I don't blame the coaches. I'm not going to blame Dak Prescott either. It was a team failure. It's a team sport.
Come on.
If one of us screws up, it's on Maggie and Perloff. I'm not going to blame you. I'll probably blame Stu. I mean, Stu, I like to blame a lot.
Well, we've already sautéed him and killed him in a previous episode.
Stu. When things go south and it's apocalypse, we're going to eat our producer Stu here. But you know, this is way too much. Also, I don't walk away from that game blaming Dak Prescott as much as you do. That did you see the line, when, especially when Nick Bosa was in the game? He was under pressure the whole time. They didn't establish a running game. This was a team loss, and this play was messed up by the whole team. This is the Cowboys.
I know what's happening to you. I can feel it. The bright lights have gotten into your brain. And what I mean by that is that Perloff and I had a really big photo shoot earlier today.
Yeah.
We didn't want to tell you because, does the audience, do they care? Do they want to know?
It sounds like bragging.
But, again, we're not those kind of people. We're not braggy people. We get it. We're dorks. We're nerds. Some of us more than others. But I think the bright lights got into your brain today. You know, those lights were really bright. We were in the studio. Yeah. There were lots of people around. We were doing multiple shoots. Like, a lot of attention on Perloff. A lot of hair and makeup, especially for you.
Yeah.
Weirdly, Perloff's makeup took longer than mine. I don't know how that happened. But there's just a lot of doting on you. And I feel like it's gotten into you.
So I walked into the building, and we're doing a photo shoot. It's not even a video. So I thought there'd be, like, four people there. There was 20 people in the room, and immediately, Mr. Perloff, how do you like your cappuccino?
It was just foam, no foam.
Yeah.
And meanwhile,
I yelled at a guy because there was a full egg omelet when I asked for an egg white omelet. I got totally diva on the situation. Yeah. It was pretty incredible, though. And you mentioned the bright lights. That is one thing I was not ready for. They're like, everything was going smoothly. Then they're like, all right, go over here behind the green screen. And it was like, I got sunburned from these lights.
I didn't want to tell you this, but at one point I was sitting off to the side sort of waiting for my turn, and like a bunch of assistants sort of rushed in. They're like, he's just sweating out of control.
Oh my God. So did everybody see the sweat? Because I felt it was going, it was trickling down my forehead.
We all saw it in HD. The cameras are really beautiful cameras. And by the way, everyone at CBS, it was like an amazing job, top notch. Everyone was so professional. It was just a little, you know, a little too much Mr. Perloff. When I walked in, and it was in the morning, and they go, so who are you? I said, oh, Maggie. They go, oh, you're so unassuming.
Yeah.
I was like, thanks?
Oh.
Is that a compliment?
Well, no.
Did you expect that I was going to get, like, carried in on somebody's, like, back? Cleopatra
actually,
style?
There were all these signs on the floor that said, Maggie and Perloff shoot. And I said, I walk up to there's, like, a desk there. And I said, hey, I'm here for the Maggie and Perloff shoot. And she goes, okay, like, are you working on it? Are you a PA?
Yeah.
I'm like, all right, I'm glad you've prepared for this. But you know what I heard a lot when I was shooting? I heard the sentence, I think we can fix that in post.
Yes.
Does that mean I did a really good job? Like, they kept saying, like, I actually,
fix that. We'll fix that.
And they had to do this thing. And the most embarrassing moment was they're like, all right, put your hands over your head. And I raised my hands. And like, everyone's like, all right, we need a new t-shirt for Mr. Perloff. I mean, again, sweating profusely, but it was very warm. The lights, it was the lights were brighter than they are on the Dallas Cowboys. I was under a lot of pressure.
Yeah. And
I totally screwed up.
And you didn't get the playoff. No, not at all. It was just funny. They're like, all right, smile. Okay, less of that. Like, okay. Uh-oh.
Less of that is never anything
you
want to hear.
You don't want that. Smell. Maybe a little less. Maggie and Perloff, we see you guys on the phones. You want to get in on this conversation. At this point, I think we can we declare this? By 6 o'clock Eastern today, you need to have blamed somebody. This is it. This is over. Last licks here for the Cowboys. We can't just keep rehashing this over and over again. You have to blame somebody, and you've got to pick a side. And we're going to stick with it. And today's going to be the end of this madness.
What are you talking about? We could do a whole segment on the Dez Bryant catch or not catch. Cowboy stories last for years.
No.
You could try and end it today, Maggie, but I don't know if it's going to work.
Oh, man. Coming up, your calls on the Cowboys. Who are you blaming? And we'll look ahead to the divisional round and the quarterback with the biggest chip on their shoulder. We'll tell you who it is, Maggie and Perloff, and you on CBS Sports Radio.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.